The School Is Out podcast with Mike and Miles. We're all about asking questions and finding solutions for all things education. School is out. Now let's get started.
Hey, Miles.
Hey, Mike.
So another series of in our vignette of strategies to get it done. And I kind of like this one. Why don't you lead us into it about something about sitting down or something?
Yeah, today what we're focused on, Mike, is encouraging teachers to not sit down in their classroom almost ever, to manage behavior and manage classes and manage relationships through physical movement in the classroom and just to stay away from their desk almost at all times.
Yeah, I think it's worth noting too that when we say don't sit down and to move around, I don't want our listeners to get confused to thinking that if you're just moving around, you're doing everything right. There's a little bit more to it than that. And I don't want to say that you're doing anything wrong, but movement isn't just movement. So if you're moving around the classroom, you should be highly observant. You should be planning as you go. So I think that's what we're going to get into. And when we talk about don't sit down, it's essential that you don't sit down. I mean, if there's kids in your room, I'm sorry, but it's a long day, and you too will build endurance and stamina for that, but that's part of it.
For sure. Way back in history time, someone once told me when I was in doing my student teaching, I think, on your feet, not at your seat. And I always tried to practice that. And I just think that in thinking about what teachers can do to make their classroom the best possible place it can be, that's one of the essentials for me. Walk into a classroom, see what's going on. If it's engaging, if the students are engaged, the teacher is not sitting behind their desk. They're with their students. And we'll talk about different ways that people can do that, teachers can do that, and what that looks like. But that just simple adage, on your feet, not at your seat, there's not time to sit down in my classroom. There's a lot of other things that need to get done. And the second that you sit down, you're telling everyone in that room, there's something more important going on at your desk than the people in the room.
And I think I want to mention too, like, just in case there's somebody listening to this and saying, well, you know, I have hard floors, or I'm on my feet so much, I have bad joints or whatnot. There are things that a teacher can do to rest their body, but not their mind per se. So let me go through a couple of little things here. And it's a little tangent, but I think it's worth mentioning. If you're in a high school setting and you do not have carpet in your classrooms, it might be a little bit of an expense to buy a couple strips of carpet or to buy some pieces of carpet so that your feet have a comfort while you're standing. That is totally worth it. They make special mats. Like if you look at any factory worker, most factory workers have a mat that they stand on. I would suggest the same thing for teachers. If you're a teacher out there and you spend all day on a hard floor, years of that are going to take its toll. Believe me, trust me. in addition to, if you put in your budget that you, and you're thinking ahead, I strongly suggest putting in your budget a little wobbly chair. They make these little, we have them in an elementary school. They're red or blue or green. And they kind of look like a piece out of that game, Sorry. It's a wobbly chair with a disc on top. You can pick those things up. They weigh a pound and carry them wherever you need to be. If you've got small groups going on, which I highly suggest you do, we've talked about that. You can plop that thing right down beside a small group and just take a minute break while you're talking to a group and then carry it to the next part of the room. So while you're mobile, you still have something to do there. And then the third thing that I would say too, just as a brief rest, when I was at the high school, we had 42-minute periods interrupted by 3-minute change periods. At the end of the day after lunch, kids would know, they would see me, you know, if I missed a period outside the door and I was sitting at my desk, it was because my knees were taking a toll on me. And it wasn't that I didn't love them, but they knew walking in and be like, you just needed a break, huh? I'm like, yep. So I took a 3-minute sit break during class change. But again, you could take your wobbly chair out into the hall and do that there too. So we are going to talk about, like, do not sit when you're in front of kids and what that might look like. But at the same time, if you need to sit, there's ways to get that done.
And Mike, I've heard rumors of teachers wearing tennis shoes to teach, or principals wearing Air Force Ones or Crocs. I mean, there are times to look really professional, and then there are times when, you know, I'm really dedicated to being on my feet, and there's no physical way I can do this unless I have a little bit more comfort. There's nothing wrong with wearing some footwear that is more comfortable, because if you're really committed to that, it'll take a toll on your feet. If you're wearing some stiff dress shoes all day long, you can definitely wear something more comfortable for sure.
Yeah, I've known people that seem to get around the building pretty fast and often, and, you know, aren't buttoned down to one spot for very long at all. So, you know, sneakers serve kind of a dual purpose there. They save your feet, and they give you a way to engage kids and parents about what footwear you're wearing. So it's kind of a fun thing. Anyway, I've heard so. But yeah, let's talk about how, if you are sitting down, let's talk about some of the things you may not be aware of. Let's talk about maybe behavior issues, planning issues, learning issues, in any order. Miles, if you see people sitting down, how aware do you think that those people are of the learning going on in the classroom?
So, I mean, first of all, Mike, if you are sitting down at your desk, you don't have a good idea of what your students are doing. I mean, that's just a fact. Even if you have a silent classroom that you've conditioned to just when you've asked them to work quietly on something, you don't know if you're at your desk if they're doing what you've asked them to do or not. You don't know if they're doodling or doing the assignment that you've given them. In the age of technology, you don't know if they're listening to music or playing a game on that technology or writing the assignment that you've given them. And, you know, I've heard teachers be super excited about this software that allows them to see what's going on their students' screens. I'm not excited by those types of things at all. I feel like we've said, you need to be moving around your classroom so you can see what your students are doing. Even if they're doing an independent activity, what is then your role in that classroom? If you've released your kids to do an independent activity for, say, 20 minutes, what's your role? That's not 20 minutes off for you, in my mind. That's 20 minutes where you get to work individually with students as they are working. You can check in on them, offer them assistance. Say they're working on a language arts essay. Well, you can read through a little part of that with them and offer suggestions or encouragement or praise them. That's your role. There are no minutes off in a classroom. And I just really feel like the second that teacher removes themselves and sits down, those are minutes off. And there can be all types of behaviors going on that you are just not aware of or unable to monitor.
Right. And something that goes along with that I was thinking of during our pre-show was, during that release process, the teacher's role becomes even more vital than the kid's role. Let me explain that a little bit. So, you know, as the salesperson in front of the classroom selling this idea that I want kids to buy, to purchase as a consumer, I'm setting them up to accept what it is I'm guiding them to do. When I release them, I now become the consumer of what they're doing. So as soon as I release them into small groups or even individual work, I am constantly checking in, because I want them to sell the same thing back to me in a way that I understand what they're learning. That is even more intricate than what you pitched to them at the beginning of the lesson. Because again, what are our roles? Our role is to measure learning, and that's what we're going to do in that case. Let's talk really quick about some behavioral issues, because I know for me, whenever I think of things that happen in a classroom, it does not matter whether it's a secondary classroom or a primary classroom. If I'm a common principal or a good, it doesn't matter what kind of principal I am. If something goes on in the classroom, the first thing I'm going to ask, the first thing I'm going to ask of a kid or of an adult is, where was the teacher? What perspective did the teacher or the adult have on this behavioral situation, on whatever went down? That's essential. And it peeves me a little bit whenever the answer is, well, I wasn't there. I didn't see it. I didn't hear it. It piques me because that's our job. Our job is to be there, is to hear it, to see it, to be vigilant on what's going on. And it might sound like that's a micromanagement style of doing things, but yeah, it is. There's nothing wrong with that.
Mike, when you're just thinking about managing behaviors and ensuring that you have a classroom that's comfortable and really conducive to learning, and you're thinking of that scenario, you know, something happens in a classroom, it gets to the administrator's level and the teacher says, I'm not sure, I didn't see it, or whatever that is. The teacher can do so many things if just through proximity and being aware of that whole climate of the classroom, if they are moving around constantly circulating throughout the students, if there's a, you know, a little bit of a conflict going on between two people in the classroom, the teacher should really be able to, not in all cases, but in most cases, be able to be aware of that before it leads to an actual altercation. And, you know, you hear a little bit of friction or a negative comment and you squash that right away as the teacher, or you know that there's a little bit of a conflict going on and you remove one of those students from the situation from physical proximity because you're acutely aware of everything that's going on and everything that's being said at all times. The more physically detached you are from those students and their relationships and what's going on, that's when you're going to have those problems occur. And oftentimes they result in like these huge behavioral issues that started really small that the teacher who's just moving and really aware of the classroom can stop way before they become serious.
I'm gonna expand upon that, Miles, because I think that's so well put. Think of it this way to our listeners too. If you're moving around in the classroom and observing those behaviors, guess what else is happening? And we talked about this. Guess what else is happening? You are building relationship capital with those students in your classroom. Do you think that they are going to trust that you will intervene if there is a disagreement? Of course they trust that. Do you know how many kids got into a fight inside of my classroom? Zero. Because they all knew if there was a disagreement, I was going to be there for them. Not there to resolve the problem. No, there for them as a person to talk with them, as a listener would, as a parent would, however that is. That says everything. Kids don't want to violate the trust that you have, but they don't want to violate the relationship capital built among the others in the class because you're, I guess, not necessarily up in their business. You care for them. You're all around the room. You care about what they're learning, what they're talking about. They know you more as a teacher. You know them more of them as a student. That's something huge. So they're not going to violate the investment that they have within the class.
And I don't want to go too far outside of the classroom with this discussion, Mike, but just think of a school in general. It could be an elementary school, middle school, high school, and think of the physical space in the hallways and picture in your mind great schools. And when I picture great schools in my mind, teachers during class changes or during times when students are moving through common areas, they're present. They're physically present in those areas. And the more physical presence that staff have in those areas, whether it be outside of their classroom, in the hallways, as classes are transitioning in middle and high school. And not an elementary expert, but I know that people move around in those spaces too. The more you have your staff in the hallways and engaged with students in those common areas, the far less problems you have as well. It's the same idea. The more presence, the more engagement, the less problems you have. Yes, there might be a fight in the hallway or something if two students are starting to have a problem, if there are no adults there to intervene or be aware of that in the first place. It's just almost common sense to me. Your physical presence as a teacher, wherever that is so important to the overall climate of whatever space it is.
Exactly. And you said it best, presence and engagement. Being in the hallway and letting everyone know that you're there for them by interacting with everybody, even if they're not in your class, it's okay to bebop around with kids. It's okay to nod your head when they walk by. It's okay to ask random questions. You know, I heard this the other day. I think it was Friday. We were talking about sports, and I hate to, again, take this out of the classroom, but we were talking about high school sports teams that their fan section is positive or their fan section is negative. And then it led us into a conversation on, there was a coach, a volleyball coach locally, that made every one of their players after the game, regardless of win or lose, go up into the crowd, pick a random person and say, thank you for coming to watch our game. That in itself is a level of engagement that invites positive interaction. So when we come to this game, we're not here to heckle the opposing team. We're not here to yell at referees. We're here to enjoy the game itself. And then when the players come up and thank us for their attendance, just think about that. I mean, that is interaction, that is engagement, and that is positive energy. That is exactly what we need more of.
Right. And it's just that idea of engagement that we're talking about. The second that you're at your desk with this barrier between yourself and your students, you're on some level disengaged from them. And you're telling people that in this time when you could be interacting with them, you're choosing not to. I don't think that teachers ever want to give that message. I'm choosing to be withdrawn from you. You know, you've said it a little bit, Mike. I just need a break. I'm going to give you this assignment to do for 20 or 30 minutes. The longer those periods are, the more often that they occur, the more students realize that teacher doesn't care about them. Right. I guess I'm just saying that very frankly. The more disengaged the teacher is with the class, the less they care about those students. It's not just about the work. It's not just about the worksheet. It's about the kids who are doing that. So maybe we could talk just a little bit more about just practical strategies for teachers. And you know a whole lot more about just the elementary environment than I do, Mike, but I think it applies to any classroom. What this looks like when teachers are doing it and doing it well. And I just want to really clearly make the statement again, and I don't want to sound harsh. I guess it will. Don't sit down. And I don't mean don't sit down for like, oh, you can sit down for 10 or 20 minutes. I mean, don't sit down. I mean, when you have students in your room, don't be behind your desk. And that doesn't mean you can't be sitting with groups as they're working. But what I mean is not at your desk doing something else. And we talked about this before we got started. When the teacher is at their desk, what else are they doing? I don't always know what that is, but I know it's not engaging with students.
Yeah. And I'll be frank too. When I made mention on earlier podcasts about sitting down, giving an assignment to take a break, that is an emergent event. Something is going on where you possibly need to leave the school and get relief. If you are taking a 10 or a 15 or a 20 minute break and giving an assignment, a couple things. One, you possibly need to leave the building and have somebody cover for you. Two, you have to expect negative behavior to occur during that 10 to 15 to 20 minutes. Nothing that you expect to happen is going to happen. It's going to outlast itself. You're going to say, I need a 15 minute break. Well, guess what? You got two because now something's going on. So absolutely. The second thing is I want to follow up on what you said. What are you doing? What is it that the teacher or the person in the classroom, the adult, what is going on while you're at your desk? I can tell you what right now, probably one of three things. Either grading papers because you don't feel like taking them home. I understand that. To me, that was where I capitalized very heavily on my planning period. I did all my grading there. I did all my planning at home. Two, I'm looking for an idea to continue a lesson that's about to happen later in the day because I'm not well planned right now. Or three, I'm doing something personal that probably should be done at home. So under those scenarios, those can be alleviated with just better planning is all.
Right. And like I said, all three of those things are telling the people in the room, these things are more important than you, unfortunately. I was thinking about something, Mike, and I was thinking about elementary school classrooms, and I've heard you talk a lot about centers or stations as students are rotating from one to the next. And I'm thinking of this, and I saw this in some classrooms recently, and it looked pretty good, but I just want to throw this out there. The model where the teacher is at a location in the room and students are working in groups, and then, you know, group one gets called up to the teacher and they're physically moving to the student or the teacher's desk, one of those half moon desks or whatever. And then they're finished with the teacher, they travel back and the next group comes up. And I'm just wondering, just think about this for a second. What would it look like? Is it more efficient? Is it better just as far as management goes if the teacher is the one physically going to the groups? And I know that half moon table is a concept that a lot of teachers use, and I'm not trying to refute that or throw that out, but I'm just thinking of some personal experiences of my own, but then just managing kids. If I have 30 kids in a room and I've got these groups of 3, 4, 5 kids moving, and is it better for me to just go to them?
Yeah, that me personally, I would probably not have that little kidney table just because it takes up a lot of space. I'm more of that person that's going to do something quirky and different, where I'm going to carry around my little wobbly chair and I'm going to meet every kid at that little group. But let's say that that's the expected idea or whatever. If I'm back at that table, I am a little bit disengaged with the kids that are in that whole group or in that larger group doing something. But very, very, very good teachers will be able to use hand gestures, eye contact with that small group, like very subtly. I'm going to put my hand down on the table and be like, I love that response. Hold on 1 second. And then you look out to your crowd and you say, Tim, I absolutely love what you're doing with your center right there. I can't wait to see that. In fact, when I call you up next, why don't you bring that with me? And then get right back to these kids here that are at my table. So if you do have those things, expert teachers are fully aware of what's going on beyond them and fully aware of that intimate conversation one-on-one or one-on-three with that small group. Again, you can move around. If you took out that table, you would have more room to create the smaller groups and then travel among them. But in some situations, you have like a sink area in elementary classrooms that's tiled, and then you have like a different type of area. And if you have those two sections, like in some schools, it's very difficult to have desks on tiled floors and whatnot. There's different options that go out there, but yes, I think that you could do that, Miles. That's a good observation.
I'm not throwing out any of those models, because like I just said, I've seen them work really well. But I'm suggesting that at times, if you're taking yourself to the students and you're sitting with them, there's just something about that. I am part of your group. I'm not bringing you away from your peers to me. I'm coming to you. So then in a lot of ways, I'm embedded. I'm ingrained in this experience. I'm interacting with you on your level. Yeah, I'm sitting at this little tiny chair with you, or I'm sitting down at your lunch table in the cafeteria and talking to you in your space. There's just something about that that changes the level of interaction between teacher and student, or principal and students, and puts you on the same plane, which when you do that, you see it in the faces of kids who you're interacting with. It's just super important. So I'd really suggest at times providing opportunities for you to put yourself physically on that student level with them.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Miles. You know me, I'm fanatical about small group instruction, and movement to me is not whole group instruction while moving around. Whole group instruction is whole group instruction. It's less personal. It's very one directional. But once you stop that after a maximum of 10 minutes, once you stop that, break kids out into smaller groups, there's your opportunity to become intimately involved in what's going on in the lives of these kids, building relationships, figuring out what they know and don't know or need help on. And that should be done, in my opinion, as often as possible. I mean, when I talk about small group instruction, I'm talking constantly throughout the day. And then adding in what you just said, cafeteria is a prime time spot to just sit down among kids. You wouldn't believe how fun it is to just sit down at a kindergarten table and just for the sake of seeing what happens. It's so fascinating. And then doing it again at a sixth grade table and how different it is. It's just such an interesting experience. It's fun to go out during recess. There's so many opportunities to get out and be with kids.
Mike, I'll never forget my first year teaching. And you know, they give your duties or your assignments to you as a teacher before the school year starts. It was my first year at a high school, and I was sitting around a couple of people as we got those assignments, and they had cafeteria duty, and they were upset. They were mad. Sometimes at a high school, that's the duty that people want least, and they were grumbling about it. And I just sat and listened because I'm a first year teacher, not knowing anything or really knowing that you shouldn't mind cafeteria duty. And then I went to someone who really became a mentor informally for me at that school. And it was the first day of school, and it was during the first lunch. And I went to go see him because I knew he had lunch then. And he was walking down the hall. I said, "Where are you going?" He's like, "Oh, I'm going down to the cafeteria." And I said, "Why? You don't have lunch duty, do you?" He said, "No, I go to the cafeteria during my lunch every day." I'm like, why do you do that? He said, "Because that's where I see the kids." He said, "I help out, and that's where I interact with the kids every day. I eat my lunch down there. I help out." And he didn't eat his lunch standing against the wall. And I watched him do that for the whole 2 years that I was there. He brought his lunch to the cafeteria and just moved from table to table and sat with the students in the high school eating his lunch. And what an awesome lesson for me as a young teacher, but that can carry on to anybody anywhere. It's just that idea of I have an option to either interact with kids or not. And if you want to be great and do what's best for your kids, you're going to choose to interact with them.
Yep, 100%. You don't sit down. You don't have a barrier between you and them, because guess what? Everybody sees it. Everybody knows that barrier is there and that you're behind it, including the kids. And they're going to react accordingly. You know, they're going to, I hate to say it, frankly. And so, and I don't know, they're going to treat you that way. They're going to treat you like somebody who's behind your desk.
Right. And maybe, Mike, we could now get to, we've touched on it, what you can do through this movement in classrooms or physical spaces in schools. And for us, I think it's just that relationship quality of everything. When you're with the students, when you're not behind this desk of a barrier, you can get to know them. People ask me that all the time, because one of the things I'm always talking about is the importance of building positive relationships with students and getting to know them on a deep interpersonal level. How do you do that? I don't have enough time to do that. This is the way that you do that. You have lots and lots and lots of opportunities for small group instruction in your class. And then you physically are with those small groups as they're working. And yes, sometimes you're talking about the work that they're doing. Yes, sometimes you're going to hear some things about their lives, and that's okay. And you keep engaging in both of those things because they're both really, really important.
Those are powerful, powerful times to interact with kids, and knowing something about them that's sideways of education and vice versa, giving them a tidbit of your life that's sideways of academics forges such a strong bond that trust is built, relationship capital is built, and now they're going to do for you knowing that you're going to do for them. We say it time and time again. The relationship is everything when it comes to teaching and learning. There's how you get it, right there.
Right. And you just, I mean, it's plain and simple. You cannot build relationships from behind your desk. You have to build relationships with your students. I know teachers who have requested to have their desks removed from their classrooms. They don't even have a desk in their classroom. They might have a small table where their computer's set up. And I think for a while in my classroom, I got rid of that big steel desk and I just wanted a table, because even if I was doing something, with a computer or something that needed to be done. I needed to have kids all around me as we were working on things. I didn't need a big steel desk. Think of those things, those like 1950s fallout shelter desks. We don't need those things. Get rid of them in a sense and just expose yourself, open yourself up to your class.
Yep, I agree. I think of the desk that's in my office right now. I salvaged it from the library, refinished it because it was a beautiful oak desk, and it just gathers stuff on top. It's like, oh man, I don't know what all these papers are. And it's like they sit there forever. But yeah, you don't need the things. I mean, filing cabinets are archaic. Desks are archaic. Put your pencils and your markers and your papers in a cabinet and get in there and get out there and be with the kids.
Yeah, and that's all there is to it, I guess, Mike. And I don't think we're not like changing the world with this podcast, but it's just so simple, but so essential to just engage, always engage with your kids and stay mobile in your class and to be around the people who you're with.
And when you do that, keep a watch for a couple things. One, watch how the interactions with your kids and you are enhanced. Watch how much better your planning gets because you know where your kids are very, very intimately. You know what they're learning and what their needs are. Watch how that affects your planning. And finally, watch how it builds your school up. Watch for the things that you do with your kids. You will become less of a worksheet person and more of a let's do this together type person. It's good all around. You're going to see these things. Look out for them.
Think about the podcast we just did last week about the math word problems. And if you as the teacher are going to write a math word problem about the things that your students care about most or say from one of your students' lives, you have to know about them to write those things. Or you have to know about what's going on in a student's life. And the only way you can know that is through engaging in conversation and being with them. Then you know about them. Then you create educational experiences that are built around the things they know and care about.
Yep, absolutely. I think that this will be a good podcast that leads into an idea that I want to explore in a future podcast about the voices in the classroom. Whose are they and what do they sound like? So,
yeah, and that's I'm going to be interested to talk through that with you, Mike. The last thing I want to touch on about this idea, and I don't want people to get confused at all, you can be on your feet as a lecturer for 42 minutes, and that's not what we're talking about. We're not talking about the sage on the stage talking for 42 minutes. That doesn't work either. That gives no opportunity for true engagement with students. That's not the model. That you can talk to students, obviously, and do a direct instruction, but that can't fill up the time. That's going to be part of the time. And then you're going to have all those different activities and structures going on in a class where you're out with the people.
Oh, I don't know, Miles. I'm going to end and I may have to disagree with you because I remember in high school, it was 11th grade and it was a social studies class and we were all given skeleton notes and our teacher was, I don't know, a little bit tired or whatever, would lecture for the whole 42 minutes. And whenever he came upon a word that was going to fill in those skeleton notes, he had a little squeaker and he'd go squeak, squeak, and everybody would perk up and write the next word that he said into those skeleton notes. And then that was going to be our quiz, was a recitation of the skeleton notes. So I don't know. I seem to remember a whole nothing from that class.
You know anything about that guy or does he know anything about you?
I don't know if he's around anymore. And if he is, I doubt he's listening to this podcast. All right. Well, hey, we had fun with this podcast. I look forward to continuing our strategies to get it done. Check us out on Facebook, on our website. And it was Don't Sit Down.
Don't Sit Down.
All right, Miles, next week.
Yep.
This has been the Schools Out podcast. Continue the conversation and explore past and future episodes at schoolisout.org.